Welcome into the Calling It Podcast. Alex Barth joined by Alex Lovewitz, recording Thursday, September 26th at bottom of the hour, 5:30 p.m. We got a lot to talk about today, but first, Mr. Lovewitz, how are you?
I'm doing fantastic. I'm doing very well. South Park is back on this week. I have not watched it yet. Do not spoil anything. But I'm doing well. It's been a good week so far.
So we actually are going to get into some TV stuff today. If you read our Twitter bio, we are a sports and entertainment podcast, sports and pop culture. We got a little bit of football to talk about, but then we're actually going to spend a good amount of the show talking TV and movies. But before we get into that, the New England Patriots and Buffalo Bills, they will play each other on Sunday in Orchard Park, New York. Both teams come in at 3-0. Friend of the show, Jesse Feldman, noted lifelong Buffalo Bills fan, texted me earlier this week, told me this is the biggest game in Bills history. The Bills have played in 4 Super Bowls. And I think like a sizable amount of their fan base believes this is the biggest game in Bills history. And I've been getting texts from him all week about Tom Brady and Antonio Brown this and Antonio Brown and Robert Kraft that. And I just assume Jesse Feldman, a friend of the show, speaks for the entire Bills fan base because he is your very typical Bills fan. And the amount of real estate the Patriots have inside these people's heads and the amount of real estate Tom Brady has inside these people's heads, it's hilarious. It's like unlike anything else in sport. You don't always get to see it because the Bills are normally so bad. But we saw it last year with that Monday night game, and we're seeing it now. Tom Brady has beaten the Buffalo Bills more than any quarterback has beaten any franchise in NFL history. And they still want to tell us he's not that good. It's ridiculous.
I love the fact that he said that. I can't believe he actually
said that. But I don't think he's the only one who's saying it.
Well, that show, but in all fairness, that shows, you know, how old he is, because he doesn't remember when they played in the Super Bowl. That was what, early 90s.
Still, okay, so even say every Bills fan under 30 believes that, that's still got to be a sizable chunk of the fan base.
I feel like the Bills, we talk about the Jets being overconfident this year. A lot of Jets fans thought that they'd be a 10-win team potentially. I never did personally. Bills fans are way worse in that regard. I feel like they're the cockiest fan base for no good reason.
Because Bills fans think they're going to win 10 games every year. Like, I understand why Jets fans thought that this year. I don't agree with it, but I understand where they were coming from. The Bills could put out a college roster, and those idiots would say, 10-6, here we come. AFC East is up for grabs. Like, when they had J.P. Lossman as their quarterback,
yep,
they thought they were going to win 10 games. When they had Kellen Clemens as their quarterback, they thought they were going to win 10 games. And look, I'll give it to them. This is as good of a team as they've had in some time. I really don't like the quarterback. I don't think he's great, but that defense is legit, and they do have some weapons around Josh Allen on offense. I do actually like the team they have. I think this could potentially be a wild card team. I actually think they could give the Patriots a game on Sunday. I really do.
But well, it's in Buffalo. They have the home field advantage.
It's going to be a ruckus environment, but it's still Josh Allen. It's still the Bills. I think they're getting way too ahead of themselves with this. Also, biggest game in Bills history, they play again in December. If these Bills fans really think the Bills are as good as they are, that game in Foxborough in December might be for the division. So be careful before you say biggest game in Bills history.
I just don't understand how you can be a fan in the AFC East that's not of the Patriots and not have the mindset of, you know, we have no shot until Tom Brady retires. At this point, that should be your mindset. Like, Tom Brady retires, then I'll get excited. For now, I want to see some young guys develop. I'd like Josh Allen to be a good quarterback one day. And I think that this team has a good roster. And, hey, maybe wild cards on the table. But how can you be confident? How can you be confident? Since I saw this stat today. Since 2000, the head coach with the most wins in Buffalo, Bill Belichick. Bill Belichick has the most wins in Buffalo since 2000, which shows
there's a bunch of stats like that. Tom Brady has more wins in Buffalo than any quarterback since 2000. He's second in touchdown passes behind only Drew Bledsoe, who also played for the Patriots.
Yes.
Bledsoe might be third. That one, Fitzpatrick might be first. Basically, every record in Buffalo wins, touchdown passes, passing yards, all of it since 2000. It's the top three in whatever order are Brady, Bledsoe, and Ryan Fitzpatrick. all guys who spent more time not on the Bills than on the Bills.
It's unreal. I mean, again, the optimism from this fan base, it's always baffled me. And at some point, you got to respect it. I mean, it's just, it's blind optimism. It's kind of just, I wouldn't say it's ignorance, but it's like, it's childlike. That's what I'll say. It's childlike.
That is the perfect way to put it. Thank you.
It's like Christmas. It's like every season is Christmas, except they're getting coal for their present instead of, you know, a legitimate gift. But they're always expecting that Xbox One or that PS4. Nope, you're getting a hunk of coal. That's what you're getting. And it's going to be delivered by Tom Brady. That's going to be the same. That's going to be what happens this Sunday. That's probably going to be what happens in December. And the reality is, even if they do win this week, I don't know. I'm still it's one of those games in division. The Patriots lose games like these once in a while. That said, I don't think it's going to happen. I don't think it's going to happen. But hey, maybe it's one score. Maybe it's closer than we anticipate.
I think so. And the Patriots are still due for their yearly September clunker. And if they don't do it now, they're not going to do it.
Yeah.
Because then it will be October. But no, I mean, I actually do think this could be kind of a close game. When you look at the Patriots and how they've struggled a bit on the offensive side of the football, and this Bills defense is far and away the best defense they've played so far. And they need to be careful about what they do. This could end up being a field position battle, which does play in the Patriots' hands because Jake Bailey has been so good. And then, of course, that defense. But they got to be careful. They can't turn the ball over. And they have had a couple of sloppy turnovers here through the first couple of weeks. I won't even count Jared Stidham's interception, but you had Gunnar Olszewski muffing the punt, and you had a fumble from Sony Michel against Miami when the game was – I mean, the game was over, but it wasn't over. We all knew it was over, but scoreboard-wise, it was still technically in reach. So they need to be careful about the turnovers because the Bills are really good at causing turnovers. If the Patriots can hold on to the football, don't turn the ball over, and the defense does what they do, they'll be all right. Josh Allen's going to make mistakes. What Bill Belichick said on Wednesday, he told us the Bills defense doesn't make any mistakes, and you have to play perfect football against them. The flip side of that is the Bills offense makes a lot of mistakes. So to me, it's going to come down to the field position battle, the turnover battle. And those are areas of the game where the Bills can't hang competitive with the Patriots. They're not better at them, but they can hang competitive. I think this certainly could be a one-score game.
Well, I think the one thing which, you know, gives me so much confidence in the Patriots, more so than in most years, is the fact that this defense is just automatic this season. And yes, they play the Steelers week one. They play like garbage, the Steelers, that is. Then Dolphins and Jets.
Okay. To be fair, yeah, we can write off the Dolphins and Jets. That was the Steelers offense that still had Ben Roethlisberger. They were fully healthy. I'll give them credit for shutting down the Steelers. Okay. I will give them credit for shutting down the Steelers. That, at the time, was a legitimate offense. If you want to write off the Dolphins and Jets, that's okay.
Even if you want to write off all those teams and say that they were cupcake teams, I don't care. I mean, I still think that this defense is far and away the best in the NFL, and I don't see Josh Allen, you know, lighting them up. So if you look at that, it comes down to, do the Patriots score more than 10 points, 14 points? And I think that will be yes. The answer is yes to that, especially given the fact that you have James White back. And although this O-line has been injured, it's another week that they've been playing together. There's more chemistry there, you have to think. And they're going to be tested, no doubt. This is a really good front seven that the Bills have. But the Patriots usually handle the blitz pretty well. And again, with James White back, that gives you another option, another target for Brady, especially a quick out or whatever, to evade that blitz. So, not worried. I think that this is going to be a fun game. I think it's going to be relatively close, but it's going to be one of those classic Patriot victories in which the score does not indicate how much they really dominated.
See, you mentioned the blitzing. The one thing, and we can close on this with the Patriots, Marshall Newhouse mispracticed with an illness on Thursday. Joe Tooney has been on the injury report both days. Marcus Cannon's been on the injury report both days. That's the Patriots' biggest weakness. We talked about it before the season. Offensive line depth was the only issue they really had, and now that issue's in the forefront. So that offensive line needs to show up to play, and they have struggled. They need to show up to play and pass pro. And we'll see how Marshall Newhouse looks after being sick all week. Mm-hmm. But they're going to need those tackles. And if you're looking at a spot where Joe Tooney injured as your starting left tackle, if Newhouse can't go, that's a shaky offensive line.
I also think that if someone gets hurt in-game on that offensive line, it's bad news. Because then you have to move people around. And it's just,
what I'm saying is, we don't know. Illness is very vague. We don't know what's wrong with Marshall Newhouse. Uh-huh. They may go into the game not knowing until Sunday that they have to move things around going into the game.
And that could be bad news for the Patriots. But again, I don't see them committing too many turnovers, if any at all. I think they have enough weapons to get rid of the ball quick for Brady. And that defense is really going to bail them out probably this weekend, like they will for probably the entire season.
All right. You got any more NFL thoughts before we move on?
Not really. Baker Mayfield going after Rex Ryan. That was fun.
Are you a Baker Mayfield guy or no?
I don't know. It's tough to tell because you want to respect the story. Guy was a walk-on. He started as a true freshman walk-on at Texas Tech, then transferred, was a Heisman winner. Then he was the first overall pick, undersized, chip on his shoulder. But he talks a lot. And I don't know. I think there's a problem with guys who talk a lot in the NFL, and there's this misconception that, oh, it's just because they have a chip on their shoulder. And it's like, don't you think Tom Brady has a chip on his shoulder? Like, and he doesn't talk to the media the way that Baker Mayfield does. You can try to hide that stuff a little bit and still use it as motivation. And listen, he's only in his second year in the league, Baker Mayfield. So maybe he gets to that point, but I don't know. You just got to talk less to the media. I don't know how guys in the NFL still play into that stuff.
One final NFL thought for me. There was a report today that the Chiefs are going to, or Patrick Mahomes is going to want a $200 million contract from the Chiefs this offseason, which tells me that the Chiefs have to win the Super Bowl this year. Because between having to pay Tyreek Hill, Patrick Mahomes, they might pay Chris Jones, or there's going to be one more contract coming. Sammy Watkins is on a big deal. This is what happens. This is what happens to every single one of these quarterbacks. It happened to Flacco after he made his Super Bowl run. It happened to the Niners with Kaepernick after they paid him, although there's obviously some other circumstances there. It's happened with a number of quarterbacks. It happened to Dalton. It happened to Stafford. These guys, they get so close, and then they ask for the big money, and then the money's not there to put the team around them, and they can't do it all themselves. So if the Chiefs are really going to have to pay Mahomes that much, maybe not this year is the window, but once they pay him, the window starts closing very fast because you're going to start losing talented players all around the ball, and you have to draft well to replace them. And the Chiefs, really outside of Mahomes and Tyreek Hill, they don't draft well. They don't have a history of drafting well. So Chiefs on the clock, and that also leads me to believe if they know they're going to have to do that, they would look at a one-year rental in a Jalen Ramsey and maybe give up too much to get him. So we'll see what happens with Jalen Ramsey.
You just stole my point. I mean, that's all the more reason to go after Jalen right. Ramsey.
That's the only thing that scares me with them.
Yeah, I mean, if they get Jalen Ramsey, that that's a huge get. That kind of makes that defense a lot better. And obviously, right now that's their weak spot. So and still, even though their defense is not great, they're the top contender outside of the Patriots this year in the AFC.
All right, so that's it for the football segment of this show. Real quick here, we're going to do a I just got a quick little rant I got to get out on parking tickets, so everybody turn your volume down. So I go in Brookline today to buy a burrito, Lebowitz, as I'm often to do. Very good burrito, by the way. And I go, there's an app, right? Have you seen these apps? You can pay for your parking ticket on your meter.
Park
on
Boston or whatever. Yeah.
Something like that. Yeah, it's called Passport. Mm-hmm. So I go to punch it in. I run across the street to get my burrito. It was quick. There was a line. I was in there maybe 3 minutes, and I come out. I have a ticket. The meter maid's already gone, and it didn't go through on the app. And I go to appeal it on the website, and you can't appeal it based on that because you need evidence. But I don't have evidence of the purchase going through on the app because it didn't go through. Guy's nowhere to be found. So now I'm stuck with a $30 burrito. And this, it wouldn't necessarily annoy me so much on its own, but 2 weeks ago, I go to get my car, didn't realize anything was wrong. I'm driving, I end up on the highway, starts drizzling a little bit. I turn my wipers on. All of a sudden, I see a parking ticket fly out of my wiper back onto the highway that I didn't realize I had because they stuffed it down there. I call them. I'm like, hey, I had a parking ticket. It blew away. How do I pay it? And there's this whole process I have to do where I have to go into the parking office, but I can only do it like on Mondays from 8 to 9 a.m. And it's ridiculous with these parking tickets, the hoops they make you jump through just so they can get 25, 30 bucks. Parking tickets are so, so dumb. It's just at what point they can already do it with the easy pass thing on the highway. Just scan the license plate. It charges 15 bucks. There's no way that they're making more money off those parking tickets than they are paying the people who, by the way, are a pain in the ass to put them in. Shoving the parking ticket down like down my windshield wiper so I can't see it, and then it blows away, and now I'm screwed. Like, come on.
I mean, those people get off on ruining other people's days. Don't get it twisted. I mean, that's just the reality. They are evil people who intend to do harm on others. And that's not an exaggeration. I know people are going to think I'm harsh, and people are going to say that they're people too. They're not. They're not people. They're demons. I was a couple weeks ago. We moved our studio, 980 WCAP, where I do the morning show. We're now on a different street in downtown Lowell, and I parked right in front of our studio. It's right on the street, so you can see outside. I saw my car the entire show. It was great. It's about 9:30. We've got a half hour left on the show, and we're on air. And I see, that's the parking guy. Uh-oh. On air, I say, Teddy, I'm getting a ticket. I'll be right back. He starts laughing. I go out there. I'm like, hey, wait. I'll pay for it right now. Please stop writing the ticket. I'm going to pay for it. The guy goes, sorry, too late. And this man had a smirk on his face. Maybe he didn't have a smirk on his face, but I saw a smirk on his face. And
the smirk in his soul.
That was probably it. I saw it in his soul because he was happy. That's the highlight of his day. When people come out and catch him in the act and get angry at him, and he could say, sorry, I have the control in this situation. He loves that. And so I hate that man. And I hope I don't get a ticket again. I might flip out. But yeah, it was brutal. It was awful. So now I have a $30 ticket I have to pay.
Can you get the clip of that audio so we can play it on the show next week?
Yeah,
I would love to hear that.
I'll dig that up tomorrow. It's like, oh God.
Okay. So make sure to tune. Go ahead.
My co-host got one too. The same thing happened to him, and he accepted it. He's like, whatever. It's like, nah.
Well, in the future to just deal with it, or really in the future to pay the meter, but they are like to the minute. Like the second that thing expires, they're right there. You don't have a minute or two to go outside or come downstairs or whatever. They are there.
It's like as soon as they take it out of their pocket, it's a done deal. They're not going back. Yeah. They're not. They don't have a quota or anything. I don't think they do. So there's no reason not to give people a break once in a while. I mean, pick a random car every once in a while. Be like, you know what? You lucked out today. And, you know, you might be a decent person after that. And people might be more understanding. Until then, I hate all parking meter maids. I hate them all.
The worst. If you have a bad parking ticket story, let us know on Twitter or call in the podcast. Maybe we can kind of get a support group going for just getting screwed over by parking attendants. Let us know. So, all right.
And it would also avoid parking meter maids getting, you know, beat up or whatever, because people have rage from that stuff.
I will say though, no speed. This is not speeding tickets, anything like that. That's a different category. We got to end Lebowitz. We got to talk TV and movies because TV's came back this week. It's already Thursday. TV is back for the fall and for the year after taking the summer off. There's a couple of big time movies coming out, but let's start with a show favorite. I know you haven't seen it yet, so we won't go into the episode that already aired, although I was a fan. I know not a lot of people were, but I was. South Park this year. Are you excited?
I'm pumped. I'm always pumped for South Park. And I think in today's day and age, it's so much more valuable to have that type of content around. I'm always looking forward to it. And I feel like comedy these days, especially in the vein of what South Park does, which is a lot of like cultural and political commentary. Yeah. It's kind of lazy, and it's kind of because we already, and they've said this, Trey Parker to Matt Stone, it's kind of like because we already live in like a satire world. Like, it's crazy to think that
write the stuff that's happening.
It's really wild. But so South Park, like, you can tell they've had some trouble trying to maneuver around the Trump stuff while being original, but also acknowledging it, which they have to do because that's kind of their shtick. But they do a phenomenal job of going about these sort of topics in a extremely original way. And I just think I can't wait. They're two of my favorite people, like for anything, athletic, like for sports, comedy, draw, anything, writing. They're two of my favorite people of all time. And if I could interview two people in the world, it would be Matt Stone and Trey Parker, just to give you some insight as to, you know, how big of a fan of South Park I am, and Team America World Police for that matter, and Book of Mormon, which I saw on Broadway as well. Everything they've done, I love. Basketball, even though they didn't write that movie.
Basketball's an all-time favorite of mine.
But phenomenal.
They helped write it, didn't they?
There's definitely some improv that was.
One of the writers was a guy who wrote Airplane, which is one of my favorites of all time.
You could absolutely tell.
I will say about South Park, you mentioned the level of satire. Yes, so I was watching yesterday. They were re-airing all the episodes from last season leading up to the premiere, and the one about Man Bear Pig. There's two. So there was one way back about Man Bear Pig that was making fun of Al Gore after An Inconvenient Truth came out, and then they brought the whole trope back last season to talk about, because the whole thing was making fun of Al Gore for going on and on about this imaginary thing we can't see is happening and it's coming to kill us. And then they brought Man Bear Pig back last season to kind of say, oh, it is real. We should have listened to Al Gore. And when Al Gore himself says he loves the episode, that's how you know they did it right. One other thing I'm really excited for is that after South Park last night was a show called Cranky Anchors, which hasn't been around 14 years. They brought it back. I think this is the perfect time to bring it back. The episode last night was good, not great. I think it was easy to get the expectations up, given that really all we've watched is the hits on YouTube from after the show was canceled. And naturally, in a show like that, you're not going to nail every single one. What it is they have comedians or actors or other famous people just prank call people, and then they play the recording with puppets acting it out. And who they had last night? They had Tracy Morgan. They had Aubrey Plaza. They generally do like five or six per episode. Adam Carolla did one. So it wasn't the best. It didn't quite live up to my expectations, but it was still good. And there's clearly room to grow. And looking at some of the comedians they have coming up the rest of the year, I'm pretty excited about it. I think that's going to be a fun one. And then Always Sunny came back last night too.
Yep.
That was, I don't know if you saw that yet. That was pretty good.
Yeah. I'm excited for Cranky Anchors is great. That one's classic. Like old Comedy Central content, obviously the Chappelle Show, but like Tough Crowd with Colin Quinn. I don't know if you ever had a chance to watch that.
Do you remember Lewis Black's Good versus Evil? That was another good.
But they had political commentary and like that sort of, that wasn't like super preachy. You had a lot of different perspectives. So, and I miss that sort of content. Like Colin Quinn should be hosting a show somewhere that everyone watches, because the guy is just brilliant and he's such a fantastic comedian and he's not crazy, which I think is you know, at a premium in today's day and age. But yeah, I'm Cranky Anchors. I'm excited for. I feel like they're gonna have to tone it down a bit because
I'm waiting to see if we get special ed.
Yeah,
I don't know if they're gonna do that or not. And that's the best character.
I heard Jim Florentine, who's one of the creators of that show. Yeah. I heard an interview with him and he said they're not bringing back special ed because he knows the reaction.
I understand why.
Yeah, and it's funny. But the thing is, like, a show like The Office couldn't be made today, and that makes me sad. And I feel like there's a lot of great content. Although the reality is Netflix can kind of avoid all that backlash because they're not, you know, beholden to sponsors and they don't have any advertising boycotts. It's kind of just a paywall. And I think that's the direction media will go in. And hopefully we can get back to the point where that comedy was at like a decade ago in regard to being unfiltered and people understanding that, you know, the intention isn't just to be offensive. It's to be funny and to shine light on things. And, you know, people aren't malicious. So that's my little comedy spiel. I'm a comedy fan. I love it. And this is definitely a good week for comedy.
Meanwhile, drama wise, it looks like the movies are going to bring it this fall. All right. We got three we got to touch on. Rank these three in order of how excited you are to see them. El Camino, the Breaking Bad movie, Jesse Pinkman, looks good. The Irishman, that's coming out around Thanksgiving. That's the one about Jimmy Hoffa, and it's got like Pesci.
It's a Scorsese film.
Yeah, it's directed by Scorsese. De Niro's in it. It's like all the big mob movie names.
And Joe Pesci's back. He hasn't acted in a movie in forever. Right. People forget that. He's gone completely. He's gone missing, essentially. And now he's back in this movie.
So we got El Camino. We got The Irishman. And then what is it? Broken Gems?
Uncut Gems.
Uncut Gems with the action movie starring Adam Sandler and Kevin Garnett, which is a sentence I definitely always thought I would say.
Crime thriller.
Rank those three in the order that you're excited for them.
I'm going to go El Camino number one. I think that's going to be kind of the consensus for most people because Breaking Bad is the greatest show of all time.
So I actually have El Camino number three.
Wow. Okay. That's
because
sad.
You know why? Because I know it's going to be disappointing. I know I'm going to be disappointed. I know it's going to be disappointing. We're not going to get what we want. I am already ready to have my hopes shattered. It's just a preemptive disappointment.
Yeah, I tweet this out. If it's anything but a classic, I'm going to be disappointed. The only thing I would have maybe done differently, and the only reason I think I somewhat agree with you that it might be disappointing, is that they didn't make a miniseries out of it. It's tough to cram a lot of what you want to in one movie, especially when you're Vince Gilligan and you kind of like to let plots develop. So I feel like a miniseries would have been the more appropriate move. I think that's like Black Mass is a great example of something that should have been either a trilogy or a miniseries with Johnny Depp.
You need
about
more,
Whitey Bulger.
You need more nuance, and it just wasn't there.
You need to stretch it out a little bit and let things develop so that it's just not just, oh, this person dies, that person dies. Here's another death scene. And so I that's the only reason I'm somewhat skeptical. I'm still extremely excited just because I love Breaking Bad for the night.
All right, number two.
That's my number one. Number two, I'm going to go Uncut Gems. And it's more because of the third movie that I haven't mentioned yet than this movie itself. But I love Adam Sandler. And I love Adam Sandler as a drama actor. He's very underrated. Rain Over Me, Punch Drunk Love, even like Funny People, which was a dark comedy. He's a phenomenal actor, and I like the character he's playing. Doesn't hurt that Kevin Garnett and Mike Francesa are in this one.
What character is he playing? I still have no idea what this movie's about.
Francesa or Adam Sandler?
Well, is Francesa playing a character or is he playing himself?
Francesa's playing a character. Kevin Garnett's playing himself. Adam Sandler's playing...
I thought Francesa was playing himself. Okay.
No, he's playing like a friend.
I get what Sandler is, kind of, but what's the plot of the movie?
Sandler...
really cool trailer, but what's the plot?
So Sandler is essentially he owns a jewelry store owner, but he's also a gambler. Like he's addicted to gambling, and he needs to essentially he's in a lot of debt and needs to find a way to pay back certain people. That's kind of the gist of the movie, and it's sports gambling is the way he does it. And from what I gathered, he's pawning off certain jewelry.
Celtics games, because that's kind of what the trailer made it seem like, was that we were going to find out Adam Sandler was fixing the 2007 Celtics season.
Well, it's not. Yeah, Adam Sandler's character. I don't think it's fixing it. I don't know, though. I kind of want to go in and just have no idea what's going on.
That's why I have that movie as number one, because I have zero idea what it's going to be. So I just out of nothing else, curiosity is why I'm so excited for it.
Yeah, and it's gonna be I think it's gonna be a really good movie. Again, when Adam Sandler decides to go dark and decides to do dramas, he's just phenomenal. He's a great entertainer. Number three, obviously, the last one is The Irishman.
Yeah.
The way that you feel about El Camino, and how it might be disappointing, I feel the same way about this. There's no way it's gonna be that good.
No, dude. I don't know, dude. Jimmy Hoffa, it's a really interesting story.
It's a good story.
And when do those guys disappoint? When does Scorsese disappoint? When does De Niro disappoint in drama? I understand when De Niro disappoints in comedy. When does De Niro disappoint in a mob movie? When does Pacino disappoint? When does Scorsese disappoint?
The only person who hasn't really, really disappointed, in my opinion, is Joe Pesci. And again, that's because he just hasn't acted in the past 20 years.
So where did Robert De Niro go wrong for you then as a mob actor? I understand he made some stupid comedy movies, but as a mob actor, where did De Niro go wrong?
I mean, it's tough to think that these guys who, you know, you think of De Niro, you think of Raging Bull, Taxi Driver. You think of all these crazy movies.
See, I personally, I think of Goodfellas.
I think Goodfellas as well. I think a Goodfellas, Casino, but you're talking like his mobster shtick. It ended in the 90s. It ended really after Casino.
Did you see him in the trailer, though? He looks young. He looks like he's in good shape. He looks like he can kick some ass.
Yeah, they put a lot of makeup on him. But I don't know if I'm going to be able to get past that. I don't know. I don't know what the reviews are like right now. I think this is going to be a disappointing movie. Because beyond that, you have a Martin Scorsese who's like 107 years old at this point. What is he? He's 76. Does he still have it? And I know that this is based off a true story, which is One Saving Grace.
Right, that helps.
And it's based off of an actual book that was already written, and he's a director. He's not writing the screenplay. I get all that. But I don't know. I like how Ray Romano's in it. I think Ray Romano being in it.
Yeah, I forgot about that. Like, that's – talk about a comedy actor taking an uncharacteristic role. Forget Adam Sandler. Ray Romano playing what's his name? Why did I just talk about his name?
Buffalino.
Right, he's the
attorney.
Jimmy Hoffa. I couldn't think of Jimmy Hoffa's name. He's Jimmy Hoffa's lawyer. Doesn't seem it's a bit of a step away from Everybody Loves Raymond, a little bit.
Just a tad. He was great in Big Sick. I don't know if you ever saw the Big Sick.
I heard good things about it. I never.
Fantastic movie. Fantastic.
I still have to see Once Upon a Time in Hollywood.
I need to see that as well. Years. That's one that I know I'm gonna really like. But yeah, this movie is gonna be a disappointment. Just prepare yourself. Prepare yourself. You're gonna want the nostalgia. You're gonna want. It's like Bucket List. It's like you see Alan Sorkin and Morgan Freeman. That was Morgan Freeman and Jack Nicholson. Okay, movie, but it's not their best.
That wasn't them playing the kind of roles they usually play. That was them playing old men. You know, if this movie was about three retired mobsters sitting around a nursing home, yeah, I'd be ready to be disappointed. But this is them in the kind of roles that I'm used to seeing them in, and that they've been so good in.
Yeah, I mean, I just think it's tough for guys who are that seasoned, to put it mildly, to really bring it in a movie like this. Maybe it's fantastic. I might be wrong, but it's number three on my list. I'm excited for the Breaking Bad movie most of all, and Adam Sandler does not do movies like this. Although he did do The Meyerowitz Story, which is also on Netflix, which is kind of like a more tame Royal Tenenbaums, for anyone who knows that one. That was a good movie.
The one with Ben Stiller Jennifer and Dustin Aniston?
No, it's with Ben Stiller.
He did that weird one with Jennifer Aniston.
Yeah,
he's done
garbage.
Some questionable movies lately.
Oh,
the one with Aniston wasn't good. And let's not forget, he's in maybe the worst movie of all time, Click.
Jack and Jill. Click. Click.
I hated Click. Click was awful.
Jack and Jill is the worst.
I didn't even bother to see Jack and Jill. But Click was really bad.
I like Click a lot.
Depressing. The second half of the movie was just sad.
I like those movies. I'm a big fan.
No, I went in to laugh, man. Come on.
Well, there's funny parts when he farts in what's his face? Hasselhoff's face. That was great.
The first like 30%, 40% of the movie's funny, and then it's just sad the whole time.
Well, listen.
I'd rather see it funny 100% of the time.
Every Happy Madison film since I'll say Chuck and Larry, I now pronounce you Chuck and Larry. Maybe That's My Boy, but I don't even want to include that. They've all stunk. They've all been brutal.
That's My Boy was only funny because Rex Ryan was a Tom Brady fan in it.
Well, and it's such a ridiculous movie, you almost have to laugh. But I would say The Meyerowitz Story, which is a completely separate film, that was with Dustin Hoffman and Ben Stiller. It wasn't directed or produced by the Happy Madison company. That was his last like good movie that I liked. This one has potential to be a really good one as well, so I'm excited, and I think we're going to see Adam Sandler do more stuff like this in the future.
You know who's due for a comeback? We got all these comebacks going on.
Who's that?
I'm ready for the Will Ferrell comeback. Let's go. Let's get it. Let's go, Will. Give me some.
I can't believe him and John C. Reilly decided to return to the screen in that god-awful Sherlock Holmes movie. Oh, my God.
Yeah, I never ended up seeing that. I think I went on a whole rant when that came out about how it was going to be the return of Will Ferrell, then I never saw it. But He's
still
got to have it in him.
I feel like they've lost.
They, for the Will Ferrell
well, he's not. They ended that him and Anna McKay. They cut off their partnership. So I think they were a tag team. They were a duo. They were one unit. And when you get rid of one of them, you get rid of both of them. And at least Adam McKay is making good films. It's just not comedy, unfortunately. But yeah, no, I don't know. We'll see. I think Will Ferrell has another good one in him, but it's tough when you make so many classics. How do you keep churning them out?
I will have to see in terms of what was the Adam? I cannot remember the name of the Adam
Uncut Sandler Gems.
One. Uncut Gems. You know, because I've been watching The Righteous Gemstones on HBO, which is actually a good show. I don't know. If
I need to get back in that. I watched the first episode.
It's good. Watch it. But so I get mixed up. But between Uncut Gems, El Camino, Breaking Bad movie, and The Irishman, we're gonna have to kind of regroup. I think The Irishman comes out around Christmas. That's the last one. I think it's about one a month from those three, and we'll have to. Or no, The Irishman is Thanksgiving. The Adam Sandler movie, I think Uncut Gems is around Christmas. I think it's like December 15th or something. So we'll have to reconvene after that and see really where these three rank. But we'll have a lot of shows before then. We got a lot to talk about before then. Bruins are getting ready to start their preseason already. Regular season's right around the corner. The Celtics, they start training camp next week. So we're getting ready to get right back into the swing of things. The NBA will be back. The NHL will be back. We'll talk about the MLB playoffs a little bit, even though the Red Sox have been essentially eliminated from them for the last 3 months. We got a lot of good stuff ahead. So for all of our discussions, follow us on Twitter at CallingItPodcast. You can check us out online as well, clnsmedia.com. Click on the podcast tab and then click on the Calling It logo. It's the one with the big microphone. We will have another show again next week. Until then, for Alex Lebowitz, I'm Alex Barth. Thanks for listening.